Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats, silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling!
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the show that defines what is and is not a disqualification in a wrestling match. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, is the Fox Network's newest star, Tyler Ward. Tyler, how are you?
Oh, I'm good, man, but I have one question for you, and you're probably not going to invite me back for this, but how do you get DQ'd in a Hell in a Cell match?
I'm glad that you caught that, too. That was maybe my, in what is going to go down as the most important week of wrestling in our lifetimes, I like that the most fun thing that happened was X-Pac on the WWE watch-along for Hell in a Cell being like, ooh, this is bad booking.
But he knew it. He was like, you're probably not going to invite me back for one of these, but like, what the hell?
I found that really fun. What do you think the chances are that he gets invited back?
Ooh, I think he might have been on the money that he's not going to get invited back.
See, I think I would have him be the next legend that The Fiend destroys.
Oh, Fiend destroys? Yeah. Actually, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that would be my fantasy booking.
And he would, and like, book it in just, like, the worst way. Like, of all the legends he's beat down, this one is just brutal.
Well, we have a lot to talk about what's happened this week. If you're a fan of this show, you've probably already listened to the AEW episode featuring you and Sarah.
Yes, who
could eventually replace me as host of this show, I feel like. And so we're going to focus mainly on the non-AEW stuff, but I'm sure that it will still come up. We're going to go through, I guess, calendar-wise, everything that WWE did in response to AEW this week.
Some good ideas and some very bad ideas.
Yeah, I would say some things that are like really good ideas that were just executed poorly and vice versa.
Yes.
I think is kind of how it went. Something that I know you didn't get to talk about on your episode with Sarah because you literally like came from the arena and went straight to recording is the actual Nielsen ratings that we ended up with.
Yes.
And I know that we've talked preemptively about how the ratings might not be the best factor going forward in this pseudo wrestling war, the way that they were in the Attitude Era. But if they are an indication, then there's no other way than to say that AEW won the first battle of the war, right?
They've won this round, but it also gets the lines get muddy if you think about. If you are going to break it down and say that they're only competing with NXT because it's the exact same time slot and not like WWE itself as an entity, because if it is, then technically WWE won, because I know the SmackDown ratings were like an all-time high for like the last couple of years. But, I mean, The Rock was there, and like I think he's a guaranteed like 1.5 million of those followers.
The Rock by himself would have eclipsed AEW,
right,
very impressive 1.4 rating, which is it beat a lot of shows. I said this to Chelsea that I was really surprised that it beat a new episode of American Horror Story.
To which
Chelsea was like, I don't think as many people watch that show as you think they do. And she was right.
Maybe not anymore.
But that was an amazing number. SmackDown on Fox got a 3.9, and that is a Attitude Era level rating.
Yeah.
Like that's a rating that could have won a slower week in the Attitude Era, which is really shocking to me. But The Rock, of course, did help. It's funny that we say that The Rock being on something is an automatic 1.4, where now I'm like, I wonder what the ratings on Ballers are. because
that's not Dwayne Johnson. That's whatever character he's playing.
Yeah, that show's about
to end.
You
put Dwayne Johnson on the card, you're good.
That show's coming to a close, and I think that The Rock didn't want to do another season of it, and I think he only appears in, like, scenes that are like phone calls and teleconferences this season.
Oh, wow.
I don't watch that show, but I've been told that it's kind of like he's not actually there as the main character for the final season. So I guess we should start with NXT. NXT had a really disappointing Nielsen rating, and it got beat, lapped, doubled in almost every important demographic by AEW. But if we look at the show just as a whole, I thought it probably was a better pure wrestling show than Dynamite was that night.
I would absolutely agree. I think NXT, I think, easily had the better wrestling, the in-ring product. I mean, that Adam Cole versus Matt Riddle match was incredible.
I should also note that it was commercial free and started the show, which was the maybe the most blatant example of counter programming. That they were like, we're going to try to like beat AEW from the get go. It didn't work, but it was a smart idea, I think.
Which actually, that's interesting because, like, I mean, given because we're going to have two very different views on how this happened with AEW, I don't know how commercial breaks happen exactly. Like, I have an idea because you can kind of guess when you're at a commercial in the arena. But it's I'm curious to see like how the pacing went of like when they went to commercial. Was it similar to the times that WWE will go to commercial? Did they ever go to commercial during the like an actual match? Because like to me, that's like taboo. I hate when they do that. So.
Well, AEW circumvented that in a way in that all of their commercials were picture-in-picture. So there was never a moment of AEW technically that wasn't seen. And I told this to you that my biggest gripe at home was that almost all of Chris Jericho's beatdown of Cody was on commercial picture-in-picture. And I feel like that was the most interesting storyline-wise part of the evening.
It was a long beatdown because in the arena...
It certainly was.
At some point, you were like, man, this is gratuitous. But now realizing that they're commercial, it does make sense.
Yeah. So what do you think what is the headline coming out of week one of a full 2-hour NXT on USA Network? What's the biggest takeaway?
Of NXT, for me personally, the biggest headline is the return of none other than Finn Balor. You thought I was going to say Ciampa, didn't you?
No. I agree with you that Finn Balor was the most important thing that happened that night, I think.
I think that was definitely the biggest one. Just because it's... I mean, you and I personally, we've been talking for years now how they're wasting Finn Balor and like he needs something. And this is literally like the best thing that I never knew I needed. I never even thought it was a possibility to have Finn go back to NXT, but I think it's the absolute best decision they could have made.
Do you think that taking an established star like Finn Balor and moving him back to NXT, do you think that this is the beginning of a trend, or do you think that he is an exception?
I think it depends, because technically this isn't the first time they've brought stars back. This is the first time they've brought a star as of Finn Balor's caliber back, a former
and seemingly, you know, permanently,
for the time being, but also like former Universal Champion, like a main eventer, Intercontinental Champion, all that, because they brought back Tyler Breeze and Fandango, and I feel like it's happened before, but this feels unprecedented in that Finn Balor is a huge name on the main roster who now for the foreseeable future is going to be NXT full time, which I think if that's in a brilliant way to keep NXT feeling different from Raw and SmackDown, but at the same time, kind of, you know, letting people know that this is supposed to be a brand unto itself. Now it's no longer developmental.
What do you think the plans are then for Finn going forward? Like, does he immediately have to be in the main event picture? It would seem that Ciampa is going to be there. Like, is it about to be like heavy and too crowded at the top?
I don't know, because NXT, I feel like every now and then NXT they've done this a lot more often than the main roster has in recent years, where NXT isn't necessarily afraid to have multiple people in the main event picture. I go back to the triple threat that we were supposed to have, Aleister Black versus Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. It didn't happen because Aleister Black was injured, but at the same time, like, they're not afraid to have these triple threat matches or these multiple man matches in the title picture. And I think the idea of a triple threat match between Finn Balor, Adam Cole, and Tommaso Ciampa, like, is incredible. So I'm excited for the possibility of that. I don't think Finn needs to be immediately in the title picture, because NXT has a lot of guys who you could foresee, like, challenging for the title. Obviously, mm-hmm. guys like Ciampa and Finn, but then you have former champions like Gargano, Matt Riddle just had a match, Velveteen Dream could have a match. Like, there's so many guys that NXT has built up to be possible main eventers.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think that there's a lot of people that Finn Balor now has not worked with or not worked with since, like, the indie days. And I think that's tantalizing.
Very.
I don't know if that means as much to a casual fan, because clearly that is who is missing. Whereas SmackDown on Fox certainly brought in a bunch of casual fans or, like, former fans.
Yeah.
NXT hasn't been able to do that. And I know it can be tough when you're the lead-in for the finale of Suits. but now that's not an excuse. So do you think that Finn Balor is a big enough name to casuals that he will actually move the needle?
Oh.
I mean, we have a very small sample size of the ratings.
Yeah.
To talk like the ratings is the big issue.
It is
the issue right now.
It is week one also.
Yeah.
I sent you the clip of it, the statement that WWE released.
Oh, yeah.
It was the most subtle way of them being like, okay, you won this one, but, like, that's just week one. So
yeah,
I think the time will tell. I don't know if right now Finn Balor is a big enough name for the casual fan who may have never watched NXT. I don't know if he is.
Mm-hmm. I want to read that statement out loud for anyone who may have missed it and don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
When the right after the ratings came out and AEW had
it's a really, like, won. Nice statement, but when you consider it coming from WWE, especially right now, like, it seems suspect.
Yeah. It is, quote, "Congratulations to AEW on a successful premiere. The real winners of last night's head-to-head telecast of NXT on USA Network and AEW on TNT are the fans, who can expect Wednesday nights to be a competitive and wild ride, as this is a marathon, not a one-night sprint." A few
because
things
we lost that sprint, yeah, that's okay.
A few things to parse through in that, that there may not be winners and losers, but the real winners were the fans, because if there was a loser, it would be us.
Yep.
Also, I think it's interesting that they mention NXT on USA Network, which is the full name of that show, and then they only say AEW on TNT. They don't say AEW Dynamite.
Because
they don't want to accidentally let someone know how to Google it and find it.
Well, yeah, they don't want to give them too much, too much spot.
So I think in WWE's mind, the thing that was going to bring ratings, especially in the front hour in this first head-to-head, was Matt Riddle, right? He is the biggest outside mainstream name that is in NXT.
Technically, but also, I mean, I think you need to consider, like, the UFC MMA fan base. Like, I don't think that fan base is that large. And also, Matt Riddle, he hasn't really been affiliated with that scene in so long.
That's what I was going to say, is that Matt Riddle, while WWE people know him as a UFC guy, I think is actually probably pretty hated by UFC fans. Like, not only is he, like, they know him and they know him and dislike him.
Yeah.
Is my feeling, based on the way that his career ended. Because I remember him basically being released and having a giant public feud with Dana White because he just, like, couldn't pass a drug test.
You just couldn't stop smoking.
Yeah, couldn't stop smoking weed. It's basically I feel like he probably still hasn't. But I remember,
somehow they've worked that out with WWE.
I remember it being a really kind of terse and sudden like decline for him, and he got out of UFC at its most popular apex, I feel like, too. So I don't know if Matt Riddle is the answer. Maybe Finn Balor is. If we're handing you the book, Tyler, how do you improve the ratings in the next few weeks and months for NXT?
I mean, I think that it's like a trick question, because I feel like what's going to make me want to tune into NXT every week isn't necessarily what the casual fan wants. I think do more of the same. If NXT is weekly putting on the better in-ring matches than than AEW is on the same time slot, I feel like honestly there's going to be coming like points where I'm going to want to switch that channel to NXT because I want to see some really good wrestling. So for me, that's the way to do it. I think for a casual fan, they either need another big name main roster person who they can bring to NXT, even part-time. Like if they could have Daniel Bryan show up on NXT for like a month or two, like just to give it some, you know, momentum, a little excitement, like I think that would be a huge thing for them.
I think that's exactly who they should bring in, actually, now that you mention it. That's someone who, you know, has been in part of a big storyline the last few months, but could easily come out of that, and I think is someone who would personally enjoy. I mean, they could decide to bring Daniel Bryan down. I keep saying bring down, but it really isn't anymore.
Yeah.
But they could move
Daniel, to move adjacent.
Yeah. They could shift Daniel Bryan to NXT just through WrestleMania season and have him feud with Johnny Gargano. I think that would be
and
money.
Who wouldn't want to see that match? That'd be a 7-star match.
Yeah. And in the way that we keep talking about how underground and more nuanced wrestling fans realize that Johnny Gargano is probably the best or second best working wrestler right now.
Oh yeah.
He hasn't been really bumped into that mega star yet. And what better way than to have him feud with the mega star that he should be built like in Daniel Bryan. Book it, NXT. There's your answer on how to win the wars. The other reason I don't know what the answer is for this, but I think NXT is going to have a handicap in a way that AEW won't, in that part of the reason why NXT's ratings, I think, have a lower ceiling is because you can, if you're trying to watch both, you know that you're going to have free access to NXT a few weeks late on the network.
Mm-hmm.
And having that second place where you can watch, I think, makes it easier for people to say, well, I'm going to watch AEW live, and that's what my Nielsen box is going to record. But I don't know if there's anything that can be done about that. I imagine USA Network has mandated like a number of weeks that it is exclusive there.
Mm-hmm.
I just also have never heard of anyone watching something on USA Networks like .com a day later. You know, like I imagine it's not a fun experience.
Yeah, I assume. I mean, honestly, there's a lot of those like major cable networks that I didn't even know had like an app or something that you can watch stuff in. Because I literally just found out today that TNT has an app.
Yeah.
So luckily I can watch AEW that way.
Any other big takeaways from AEW Dynamite that maybe you didn't get to in your initial reaction, or maybe something you think differently about? Like a few days later.
Not particularly. I mean, the main thing I would have to say is, it's to be understandable. I think I went in with like a little different expectation of what we were going to see, but in retrospect, the idea of like, well, this is just their first week of an ongoing television show. Now it totally makes sense. Honestly, I was really annoyed in the moment. I was really annoyed by the Moxley interview and interference in the main event,
which should have been a DQ in a league that boasts that wins and losses matter and rules are established.
Well, actually, I'm okay with that because AEW, they need to be more vocal about it is the issue. They've had this understanding with their referees that DQ is going to be the same way that New Japan does it. It is up to the referee's discretion. So the referee doesn't have to disqualify the match if someone interferes and attacks a player. They don't have to disqualify the match if someone hits someone with a chair. It's entirely up to the ref's discretion. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that's a perfectly okay philosophy to have with matches. The problem is that is not the norm when it comes to professional wrestling.
Yeah.
So they have 30 plus years of conditioning to deal with. So
they got to establish a way to condition us the other way. Because at home, I knew that the referee had made a decision, right? Because the commentary reinforced that.
Yeah.
But you could tell in the arena there was confusion.
Some people were confused. I was okay with that spot. My main issue, and it was it's kind of silly, but I was upset that Moxley took Kenny out 5 minutes into the match.
Yeah.
Because we didn't get any more Kenny.
Yeah.
I've been waiting years to see Kenny wrestle live.
You keep trying to see Kenny live, and he keeps
eluding me. He just keeps eluding me. And finally, I get to the show where I'm like, I know he's going to be there. He has to be there. He's going to be on TV. And then I see him for roughly 5 minutes, and then Jon Moxley takes it away from me.
You're going to go to Full Gear, though, right? You're thinking about going to Full Gear?
I'm considering it, and that's actually a conversation that you and I are going to have after this. I have a thing to pose to you, my friend.
We have an off-mic conversation we have to have.
Yes, yes.
If I can go back to the DQ thing for just a second.
Sure.
I think the little touches. Okay, here's what I wanted and needed AEW to do in its first show, is I needed it to do all the things that WWE can't do as boldly as it could, right? I needed it to showcase what it has that makes it different. I think it did in showing the types of talent it has, although I feel like everyone was very much kind of on a leash. We didn't see everyone's best drag out match. It felt like we were being introduced to everybody.
Which again, that's it's to be expected.
Yeah. I really liked the touches with the graphics of the wins and losses. I just think they need to be bigger and more present, maybe. And I think that they need to lean in further into having a sporting presentation. And I have a few ideas for this that AEW can do, if they're listening. When that referee makes his discretion as I'm not going to DQ this, I'm going to let this go, there needs to be a referee signal for that we all recognize as that is the signal.
I do actually. I like that.
Because that will pop the audience too. If they're looking to him to DQ and he's like, no, we're still going.
There could be a crazy interference or someone goes wild with a chair. And then you have the pause where they look to the ref and then the whole audience is quiet and the ref pauses for effect. And then he's like, no.
Yeah. And the beautiful thing when you talk about you have to go against conditioning is that in sports, in the most popular sport in the world, there's already a recognized referee motion for this, and it's in soccer when you play advantage instead, when you can call a foul, but you play advantage instead because there's a goal scoring opportunity. Yeah. So there is a signal for this that they could just adopt. The second thing I think they should do is they should, especially now when they're trying to introduce new fans to who everybody is, they should have a graphic, a lower third, that has the last name of each competitor and the color trunks they're wearing. The way that you would in boxing or UFC.
Yeah.
I feel like something like that would go a long way, even if it's just at the beginning.
Yeah, I'm for it. I like that. Yeah. It would at least give it that more sport presentation. Yeah.
How much did you love Jay and Silent Bob being there?
Oh man, it was a blast seeing them. But literally the second they started walking through the crowd, I picked him up and I was like, oh my god. I was like next to Sarah, I was like, Sarah, this is Jay and Silent Bob. And she was like, who? I was like, it's Jay and Silent Bob. I was like, it's Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes. And she's like, who? And I was like, Kevin Smith, he's a director. He directed like Clerks and Dogma and Chasing Amy and Mallrats. And she was like, who?
What? There's not a very big age gap between you two, but certainly I could see the generational shift there.
But it was more like I think in a weird sense, Kevin Smith's movies I think like appealed to a very niche crowd.
Yeah.
So I had no other way to explain who Kevin Smith was.
Yeah.
At that point, I was just like, he's a guy.
He's someone.
He's a famous guy. Jericho's gonna be in his movie.
Yeah. I feel like we should move on to Friday night. We should move on to SmackDown's move to Fox.
Sure. Well, did you have anything else about AEW you felt ways about?
Oh, man.
Anything about Mr. Jake Hager? Or...
Yeah, I felt like that was a weird person to have as your big surprise.
It was a weird one.
It was a weird person to end the show with, I should say.
In the moment, I was telling Sarah, I was like, I mean, he's nowhere near a CM Punk, but like, I guess this is pretty shocking.
It's certainly shocking, in the sense that like, I would never have guessed that was going to happen.
Yeah, it was over with the crowd, man. The whole place started chanting, doing the "We the People" chant. Like,
I think he's someone they could build that doesn't have a big enough WWE stigma. Like, it shouldn't be hard to rewrite who he is. And I know that he's been successful in MMA as well. So he definitely has like a legitimacy recently.
Yeah.
I guess I was fine. I'm curious to see what they're going to do with him. I like the idea of a Jericho led faction.
I do. Yes, I do. That was, I think, my favorite storytelling device for the very first episode, is immediately setting up this faction around Jericho, like immediately give him protection, give him minions.
Yeah.
So whoever is going to be challenging him has to really work for it now.
Yeah. But starting next week, we got to see Kenny wrestle to the best of his abilities. Like, he has to get out there and show why he is the best asset that WWE doesn't have.
I keep hoping that they have a plan, and I'm sure they do.
Mm-hmm.
I keep hoping that like this Kenny's like quote unquote losing streak is building to something and everything. And if you follow the Being the Elite YouTube series, they have like an underlying storyline in there with Kenny's whole thing. And so I am confident that it's going somewhere, but like, I just want it here now.
Yeah.
You know?
And we got, and this I'm sounding like I didn't enjoy the show, but I really did. But like, you got to do something that WWE can't do and put it on the show, and that's Being the Elite. Like, it got them to the dance. They got to have it be a segment, whether it's in the ring or like pre-taped and shown. Like, it has to, because the new fans coming to it don't know to look for it.
Yeah.
You know? But that's neither here nor there. I guess it is. But that's my segue. I do want to go to Friday.
Yes.
To Fox. SmackDown on Fox. Tyler, what's the big takeaway, big headline for you?
Oh, it's not a good one. It's not a good one. They did Kofi dirty. That's all I can say. They did him real dirty.
Kofi
I'm not
dirty.
Happy about it.
Kofi Kingston. The dirty persona of Kofi Kingston.
Okay, actually, hold on. I got to rant about this real quick.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Tyler's going to rant.
Let's put Brock Lesnar aside. The fact that all of the fans are so sick of Brock Lesnar just showing up and like dominating our favorite person, no matter what storyline they had going, no matter what title run they were in the middle of, we're going to have Brock show up and just throw a wrench into that. Let's put that aside. Let's say if it wasn't even Brock Lesnar, if some rando Joe was the one to beat Kofi in 8 seconds, let's say it was anyone. It's
also,
still...
I want rando Joe to be Samoa Joe's new game. Yeah. Keep going. That's great.
It's still absurd, quite frankly. Like, do you remember the lead up to WrestleMania, Kofi Mania? It was one of their best running storylines that organically came about, that WWE capitalized on and was like, yes, we're gonna do this. Like, it was equivalent to Yes Mania. It was equivalent to the CM Punk push after the pipe bomb. Like it felt so organic and real, and they actually gave the fans what we wanted. That he had arguably the best match at WrestleMania with Daniel Bryan, the best feel good moment, the best pop of the night. So let's start there, and then we're gonna give him like a 9-10 month title. That's wrong. Like 7 month title reign.
It was still a long one. Yeah.
which granted, he didn't have like many memorable or notable matches in the title reign.
They were
still
just all against Randy Orton.
They gave him a decent title reign. He had a feud with Randy Orton that was like 10 years in the making. So like they at least capitalized on that. And you're going to end it by having him squashed in 8 seconds to Brock Lesnar.
Mm-hmm. I think it was just, actually 5 seconds. I think you gave him three seconds longer than...
I try to be positive, but like I can't be positive about this. Like that was a bad decision.
Mm-hmm. I can explain in real time why it was a bad decision as well, for a different reason.
If you'd like to vent now, I'm gonna tag in.
Well, I'm giving you a first. Thank you for the hot tag. I'm giving you a real life example of why it was a bad decision. So during the premiere of SmackDown on Fox, I physically was in New Orleans at a bachelor party in a pizza shop, right? With a bunch of people who maybe watched a little bit of wrestling in the Attitude Era, but hadn't recently. And SmackDown on Fox was on the TV in the pizza place. And they were all kind of getting interested in it. Mm-hmm. And it was right before the main event. And Kofi comes out. And then Brock Lesnar comes out. And they know who Brock Lesnar is. And they go, how is this guy possibly going to beat Brock Lesnar? Mm-hmm. So I start explaining, well, this is who Kofi is.
This is why
he has a chance to win. And he, like, this is how big he is. And they all go, oh, okay. And they're in. And then the match starts, is over, and they go, oh, well, I guess not. And that is,
that's the point where they turn, look at you, and they're like, oh, really?
Yeah.
So Mr. Wrestling.
So I imagine that all the other people who came back because they are, you know, 18 to 35 male demographic people who were watching football, who saw all the amazing marketing that was done for this show, and tuned in and thought the same thing, just had it confirmed that Kofi Kingston is a jobber.
Mm-hmm.
So now they got to do something with the New Day prominently. I don't know what it is. I don't know what there's left to do with the New Day, but they got to have something to make it up to him.
Do you think Kofi's going to get a rematch?
No.
No?
I think if he does, it'll be even shorter.
Yeah.
I think it'll be like a non-match.
It'll be on SmackDown. For opening match, like, mm-hmm.
What do you think about the events after the match? Because that is really what they were hanging their hat
on. So the whole point of this, and I'm not for it regardless, but it was to set up the fact that Cain Velasquez, UFC heavyweight champion, who mm-hmm. in fact won the title from Brock Lesnar, to debut and like beat down Brock.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the positives here, the positive takeaway. I genuinely was like interested in seeing fear on Brock Lesnar's face for the first time in years.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how Vince convinced him to like actually sell that. But like Brock looked actually afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was that like had me interested. I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of cool. But my gripe, and this is like an overarching gripe with like the kind of scene of professional wrestling right now. I and SmackDown confirmed it for me. I am not a fan of this UFC like professional wrestling crossover.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it because UFC is a legit like fighting sport. We all know this. Professional wrestling is scripted. They're not actually fighting. We get that. But it is so detrimental to the fans. It's so detrimental for me to care about professional wrestlers, if I have to live under the kayfabe assumption that any UFC fighter is already notches above any professional wrestler. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Kofi Kingston was your WWE champion. He went to WrestleMania and beat Daniel Bryan, one of the best wrestlers on the planet. Mm-hmm. He defended that title for months. But just because Brock Lesnar was a former UFC guy, he gets to squash him in 8 seconds.
Yeah. Like, and it's frustrating because they could have jump-started this Cain Velasquez-Brock Lesnar feud without the title.
It doesn't need the title.
Because like on paper, I love and I'm sure that the WrestleMania match is Cain Velasquez versus Brock Lesnar. Yeah. And that's fine. Like, I get it.
And maybe they'll have Kane take the title from Brock again. Like, cool. Mm-hmm. Or just they'll just have Brock retain and, like, quote-unquote, avenge his loss.
Well, I also see the potential for an actual long-term storyline between now and then because of Cain Velasquez's ties to Rey Mysterio. And I like what they've done with Rey and Dominic. And now you can keep Cain Velasquez and Brock away from each other a bit by having Rey Mysterio be the next person to challenge Brock for the title. Right, and that's a match I want to see, actually. I think that's great.
Yeah. You can as do long something as, I mean, with as long Dominic as they don't like, squash him in 10 seconds.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. But they, I remember them being people that, like Brock and Rey as being two people that really worked well together during
back
Brock's original
day.
Run. Yeah. Yeah. But I see that storyline. But again, like it doesn't have to go that way. And also, like, and I don't want to sound like I'm a guy who's about to come up here and body shame. Especially someone like Cain Velasquez who can beat the crap out of me.
Who would eat you?
But Cain Velasquez like has a certain body type and always has, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But if you are trying to hype him up as the other UFC fighter who can beat Brock Lesnar, mm-hmm. I mean, for this time at least, you should have put a shirt on him because he clearly like isn't in like fight mode.
He's like weirdly unintimidating physically.
Yeah, he actually looks. It's not even that. Not them calling him fat because he's not.
No,
they call
no.
Him,
he's
like,
just
dopey.
He's not cut like professional wrestlers who. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Like they're incredible athletes themselves, but like it's mm-hmm. more about like the presentation where. Yeah. UFC fighters and stuff. It doesn't matter what you look like. It's all about like the performance.
Yeah.
So. And I think I saw a tweet from Meltzer about this because someone asked him about it too. Like Cain Velasquez isn't the biggest guy and doesn't have the best physique, but like without a doubt, he probably trains harder and has more stamina than anyone in that company.
Yeah. And the thing is like there are other like heavier guys like Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens, and it's fine that they don't look like muscle bound people because they look at like the best that they're ever going to look, right? The problem is that we've seen Cain Velasquez look a lot better even mm-hmm. recently than he did. And there should have been someone to not put him in like dad jeans when he came out there. Maybe my complaint is more with the attire than anything else. But so that's what we've got going forward. I can't wait for the eventual Cain Velasquez versus Mayor of Knoxville, Tennessee Cain match.
Oh man, that would be dope.
I really don't want to see Cain Velasquez win the Royal Rumble, which is what I think is going to happen.
But and at this point, like I've made my point, I've said my piece, but like I just don't like this UFC invasion thing happening. And I didn't like it with Ronda either.
Yeah.
Like Ronda was entertaining, and she's like she was, you know. Okay in the ring, but like she's not a good professional wrestler, and like this is professional wrestling.
It certainly is. So the show kicked off with some professional wrestlers, and for as bad as the ending was, I think the beginning was really good. What were your takeaways from Becky being put out there with The Rock?
I thought it was incredible. I thought literally all three of them were amazing.
Yeah.
And especially
the third being Corbin,
especially Baron Corbin. Baron Corbin has truly come into his own right now. I think it took him a very long
Chelsea
time.
Chelsea is shaking her head at that assertion you just made.
Well,
that Baron Corbin is
good. I think it took him a long time to figure out like what spot he like fills on the card, and I think he's found it, man.
Mm-hmm.
Mid card to like. Sort of upper card heel. It's like I think he does that like better than a lot of other people in that company.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just want to point out that I think that for new fans who may have come because they saw all the ads while watching NFL, the ads that heavily featured Becky and Kofi, they were it was communicated to them why they should care about Becky in a way that it wasn't communicated about Kofi, because she went out with The Rock and The Rock says, hey, she's great. And she goes, I am great. Here's why I'm great. So then you believe she's great. And I don't know why that wasn't the like trend throughout the night. Because here's the other kind of weird headline coming out of it. Otherwise, other than that it was a rating success with 3.9. The other weird headline is that there were a bunch of former stars who were advertised for the show to bring people in who were not there.
Oh, wow.
So Stone Cold Steve Austin was not there. Sting was not there. And a few others. But like those two big people.
I forgot that technically, yeah, they were advertised for it.
Well, does that mean that, it didn't matter then? Like if we still watched and entertained and we forgot that they were supposed to be there?
I want to give them the benefit of the doubt, and maybe they were like, we have that. I mean, they were, I guarantee what they were thinking is like, look, we got The Rock. We don't necessarily need all these other people. Maybe they advertised, you know, Austin and Sting and these others before they got confirmation from Dwayne. But I think the second he returned their call, they were like, yeah, we don't need you guys. We got Dwayne.
Yeah, it's just strange, though. I feel like now is not the time for WWE to create any mistrust with their audience, especially
well,
like people
they're
trying to
bring back.
They
ain't doing a great job of that, man.
Well, should we go to Hell in a Cell then?
do you have anything else to add about SmackDown?
No, the other thing I'll say, and I think that this is the proof is in the pudding as to why the rating was so good, is that they did a hell of a great job marketing like for this event. Like you had so many people out there making the rounds. Like I was watching a random Cubs game a few weeks ago and Braun Strowman was there for the seventh inning stretch and like hyping it out. Like they did so much to make it known that this was happening and was a thing. Enough so that random Louisiana New Orleans pizza place turned on their TV and put this on.
And put it on, yeah.
Like on a night that there was college football going on in Louisiana, this was on the TV. And I think that is a victory. Mm-hmm. And if they can keep that up, then that's all that they need.
Yeah.
But speaking of keeping it up, Hell in a Cell.
God.
What is your headline for this, Tyler?
Oh, jeez. I think X-Pac said it best.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get disqualified in a Hell in a Cell?
Yeah. So do you want to explain to anyone who maybe was under a red cage and missed it, like
God,
what happened?
Too. Okay, let's start with the positives here.
Mm-hmm.
Becky versus Sasha was awesome.
Yeah, fantastic.
that honestly, there's not a large base to compare it to, but easily the best women's Hell in a Cell match we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so like that, it was super great. Loved that. Everything about that main event was not great.
Mm-hmm. So in the main event, between Seth Rollins and The Fiend, there's a curious initial decision to have the entire arena caked in red light during it.
Did you like that or no?
I liked it from home, but
really?
I feel like I would have hated it there.
Okay.
And I feel like that is why the eventual headline of this is that the crowd reaction to the main event is vocally bad. And not in a way that's like they got heat. It's like we do not like the product.
I was not a fan of the red light. I get the like what they were going for, but I was not a fan of that.
Yeah.
The booking obviously is the main issue. I don't know. It ultimately leads to a more upsetting fact that. Why can't you just get Bray Wyatt right?
Yeah.
he's so good. Like, why do you keep getting him wrong for years now?
Are you ready for the most shocking part of the week?
Hit me.
I really liked the main event.
Oh, Andrew.
I'll tell you why.
Guys, you've heard it. This is the final episode. Yeah.
Here's my little rant on it.
Okay, hit me. I ranted. Yeah. Now you get to rant.
I think they told a really specific story, in the sense that if the Fiend is a horror movie villain, they did a horror movie storyline where no matter how many times you do something that should kill the villain, he gets back up.
And I thought that was great.
Yeah, I think it was extreme and it was different looking, and like it was the most one-sided beatdown. That just like I love the Fiend kicking out at one after being like destroyed by weapons for a while. I think the spots with Seth Rollins hitting him over the head with a full toolbox and then the tools going everywhere and the eventual final move of the sledgehammer, I think those were like legitimately brutal and vicious. Like moves. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that this is the most brutal match that WWE has, and we've seen this because in the most infamous one in between The Undertaker and Mankind, he like quote unquote attempted to murder him multiple times and the match wasn't stopped, right? Yeah. And the problem is that even though the sledgehammer to the chair to the head of Bray Wyatt is really gnarly, it's not enough to have the referee's discretion be to disqualify a match, like Hell in the Cell.
For me, the biggest issue with that is the by doing that, and this also this is now a pattern, because they did the same thing when Brock interfered in that last Hell in a Cell with Strowman, mm-hmm. and like, because Brock showed up and beat everybody down, the match was like, you know, called a no contest or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, this is now a pattern that they clearly don't care about the parameters and like the history that the Hell in a Cell has set, because the Hell in a Cell, it's supposed to be the end all be all match. It's the culmination of a feud, because there's no step past a Hell in a Cell. You lock the participants in a cell and you just let whatever happens happen. And so the idea of having refs like stop the matches or a pseudo disqualification, it's, to me, it's negating the principles of the match, and therefore it's just like it's making it so much harder to suspend the disbelief and get invested, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just frustrating because I think they got so close to a perfect ending, and I think it's
honestly
like,
I will agree. I actually think all the storytelling within the match of Bray is this undefeatable horror villain who no matter what you throw at him keeps coming and coming and coming. I love that story. I liked the spots, the end all spot of the sledgehammer like onto the mountain of destruction. Like, I actually liked that too, but the ref should not have stopped
it. Yeah, the problem is that you can get, as a horror movie, because I'm thinking of this match as a horror movie, mm-hmm. you can get away with being a really good horror movie that has a bad ending, right? And people could still be like, yeah, I got what I wanted out of that. The problem is that this was a non-ending. It was like the horror movie just like the film reel cutting out before the last few minutes. And it wasn't, if it was confusing for us at home, it was 10 times more confusing for a live crowd who also visibly couldn't see what was going on. And you know what? Maybe that's okay in another era to have a show like this that you book knowing it's going to be controversial, but it's really stupid and dangerous to do in the first week of a competitor having a national platform, because then people aren't just booing the ending and saying bullshit or refund. They're booing the ending and chanting AEW and making the hashtag cancel WWE network trend until Monday at 5 p.m. You know, and that is the worst thing that could have happened for them. I actually think history will make this match shine better.
I certainly hope so. But I do not share your optimism, but hopefully.
But I think this is going to be like in the eventual book and documentary about the Wednesday Night Wars and like the war with AEW. I think this is going to be like the first big like thing where people say like, well, we could have done this a different way, and this is what led to like the other team having a score.
Like 30 years from now, when AEW buys WWE on national television, and AEW is releasing, you know, DVD sets of the fall of WWE, this is going to be a point they mention.
I don't think it will be as bad in history as like fake Diesel and fake Razor, but it's frustrating because it should have been good. And again, full transparency, we are recording this during Monday Night Raw, of which opened tonight with a backstage thing with Lana and Bobby Lashley in bed under the sheets together. Oh, I just want to point that out.
That stupid story.
I want to say what I would do tonight is I would have Bray Wyatt go over and win the title tonight.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think that would reverse all of this. But I don't think he's actually medically cleared to wrestle tonight, legitimately.
So I don't know if it would make up for the damage they've done, but it's certainly a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. There's another issue with this, is that this is kind of a sign, too, of the fact, and I think NXT has been a big sign of this as well, is that now that AEW is a thing, WWE writ large is putting a lot more effort into making their weekly television good and big, and how do they not neglect their pay-per-views? Because I think now the quality of the pay-per-view, of what you're trying to sell people, that you're not getting the ad revenue for, that isn't already making the money itself, the quality there is dipping off. And if people cancel the WWE Network like they hashtagged they would, it won't really affect weekly TV, but it will really crater the network and the pay-per-view market.
Well, but also, I mean, and given like, hopefully this week is an anomaly given, you know, the premiere of all three of your shows and like a new season sense, while also your competition premiering, like the promotion for Hell in a Cell was essentially non-existent.
Yeah. I forgot that it was last night.
We knew four matches on the card before like yesterday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And like on, and I mean, for a WWE pay-per-view, I feel like that is very weird.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I mean, this was such a crowded time frame, so there's a lot going
exactly
on.
Yeah, I mean, this is the busiest week like in the past 20 years, so.
Yeah, I mean, but this, like, you can't be having non-finishes on your pay-per-views. Do it to NTV. Because would you, if imagine if that Hell in a Cell match was just like what was on the Raw, the first Raw of like this last week of like new Raw, like people would have loved it. I think. I don't think people wouldn't have booed saying refund.
They wouldn't have booed because, again, the pay-per-view has been conditioned to wrestling fans that is either going to be like the end of a feud, or you know what I mean?
And it's going to be conclusive.
This felt very non-conclusive.
Yeah. What do you think they do with Bray Wyatt from here? Because I still feel like there's hope to make him.
I don't cash in on him. I think I'm a little more optimistic than the majority of the wrestling fan base right now. I don't think they've ruined Bray Wyatt. I think he's still, the Fiend still has a lot of potential going forward. I'm really curious how Vince sees the Fiend. Cause like, It's clear that he's like the most over thing in the company right now, next to Becky Lynch. So, I don't understand why you're not booking him the way that he should be. But again, this has been a perpetual problem with Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt has always excelled like I would say more than the average superstar. He's always excelled. He has always been relatively over with the fans. And in these rare moments of him hitting these incredible strides, and they just never capitalize on it. Like, I don't understand. Bray Wyatt is so good.
Yeah.
He is so good.
I think he's gotta win the title soon. I think
in order to salvage the Fiend, I think, yeah, you have to give him a meaningful actual win.
And the issue too is that on the other side, Seth Rollins, who WWE has put so much currency in to be the face of the company while Roman was out and is still like getting back up to speed. Seth Rollins should be the most likable wrestler in the world because he is an indie guy who can talk, who can work with anybody.
But
he's starting to get booed. He's starting to get booed as a champion. And I think it's evident that Seth Rollins is more valuable chasing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I like Seth Rollins. I think he's a really good worker and stuff, but like I agree that almost all of Seth Rollins' title runs have been extremely bland to me. Mm-hmm.
The best one was when he was a heel.
Exactly. I was gonna say the only one I remember fondly was when he was a heel with like the Authority and J&J Security, and he had the dual run with the United States Championship. Like, that was the most interested I've ever been in Seth Rollins.
Yeah. So I think, man, this is really the answer, I think, is to save both of their hottest commodities on Raw. And I feel like both of them will stay on Raw even after this draft that's upcoming. Mm-hmm. I feel like The Fiend doesn't feel like a SmackDown on Fox, like closer to realism kind of thing to me at all. I think to save them, you got to flip the title, right?
I mean, I'm all for it. I agree with you there.
So hopefully, somehow, some way, when you're all listening to this in the future, when we're not, hopefully they've done this on Raw already. Yeah. But I doubt that they will. But that's okay. Do you have any other takeaways from Hell in a Cell? Or really, the bookends, the beginning and the end, is really everything that sucked the air out of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, the other random positive takeaways, I'm genuinely interested in Chad Gable. I think they're booking him like fairly well for having a feud with Baron Corbin. Like, we're really displaying that Chad Gable is a great wrestler. Like, this guy just oozes like Kurt Angle vibes, and I really love that. So I'm super pumped for that. I love Chad Gable.
I love that Asuka and Kairi Sane have a title again.
Yep, that's good. I'm for it.
Yeah. Does going back to SmackDown, does Tyson Fury and Braun Strowman do anything for you?
Not a damn thing.
If there's anything that people watch less than MMA, it's boxing.
I'm slightly more entertained by it just because I like Tyson Fury.
Yeah, but his coat was awesome.
Yeah. I'm slightly more entertained by it, but it's just, I'm not taking it serious by any means. This is going to be akin to, you know, Big Show versus Floyd Mayweather or something like that.
Yeah. I think this could be a little better just because they're both the same size. Except, but who knows? Oh, Aleister Black is on Raw right now.
Oh, well, that's good. That's a positive.
That's a good sign. That is kind of everything that has happened in this gigantic week of wrestling. I feel like there's stuff we may have missed too, but it, like, how could we not? Like, what happened on MLW this week? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think it was this week, but was there a big like New Japan thing recently?
There's been a lot of New Japan shows.
But besides
Kenta, well, besides Jushin Liger becoming his heel persona and trying to stab a guy.
Yeah. That was amazing. I don't know. I don't think anything big has happened there. Roosh is your new Ring of Honor World Champion.
Oh, yes.
So that's cool.
I feel like there might be an episode we have to do just about the history of Ring of Honor here soon, because Roosh is the new champion, which is great. But reportedly, that pay-per-view did under 800 buys. Not 8,000, not 800,000, 800.
Oh, 800,
my 800.
God.
Which,
that's so bad.
Yeah. That's,
oh, poor Ring of Honor.
That's pretty bad.
Luckily the company who owns Ring of Honor like has more money than WWE.
Yeah, well, yeah, I will not sleep, I won't lose any sleep or cry any tears for the company that owns Ring of Honor.
No.
Actually, not to make this a political show, but Sinclair Broadcasting, not exactly my favorite people in the world.
No. But damn, that's unfortunate for Ring of Honor. Ugh.
Yeah. So again, it's a great time to be a wrestling fan. There's so much of it right now.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to come up next for us on this podcast? We're going to do a Bray Wyatt themed Halloween kind of thing as our next episode.
Yep. We're going to have a spooky Halloween episode for you guys in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if we have anything planned.
Yeah, there's
after
a lot.
That.
There's a lot to do. I know that we have a very particular format on this show that's kind of softened because we are in the, like, we usually talk about wrestling history, but we are living the history at the moment.
Yeah. It's all very, very recent right now.
So people, let us know what you want us to talk about, really. Do you want us to kind of go back to the norm, or do you want us to lean into this while we're still fresh in this war? Do you want us to do a big thing about the Monday Night Wars? Because we can do that as well.
Well, yeah, and I know you and I are talking about planning that, so maybe that's something that will be in the works as well. Maybe we can come up with something fun for like a Thanksgiving episode. Maybe we can finally track down who threw that pie at Kevin Owens.
That's never going to happen. I don't think that's going to be solved anytime soon.
No.
But that is about everything that we have for this episode. Do you have anything to plug with the Turbo Mansion?
Not really. We're about to hit that slow season where you know, the holidays are coming up and everybody's busy. So unfortunately everything's a little postponed at the moment, but hopefully we'll have some interesting stuff for you soon. How's the podcast world going?
Podcast world's going great right now. Nice. Got a new episode coming out this week about books that are really hard to read, not because they're bad, but because the language is difficult.
Okay.
And then today, actually, and I guess this is going to be our Halloween episode, I got to interview Joe Hill. So that was really fun. If you don't know who Joe Hill is, he's a prolific horror writer who may or may not be Stephen King's son. So
may or may not
he is, and he's much more open about that now than he used to be. But
okay.
You look at him, and it's no,
it's uncanny.
Yeah, there's no like mincing it. Like okay, that's Stephen King's son. Yeah, so those are coming up soon in the Harper Audio Presents world.
Excellent.
Yeah. So again, if tell us what you want us to talk about, and we will do it. You can tell us at muchadowrestling.com or on Twitter at adowrestling, or you can email us muchadowrestling@gmail.com or go on Facebook. We check that a lot, muchado about wrestling on Facebook. So, as always, we're going to leave you in the words of the immortal Sean Waltman. How are you going to have a DQ in a Hell in a Cell?
It's bad booking, Seth. Bad booking.
I know you're not going to invite me back. Oh, God, that video of the fan yelling at Seth.
Yeah, the bad booking. Thank you.